Shalom and welcome everyone to the ICJ weekly webinar. I'm David Parsons at the headquarters of the International Christian Embassy here in Jerusalem, welcoming you back to our webinar series after our holiday break. We hope you've off to a good start to the new year. Of course, the big news here in the region has been all the disturbances, the protests, the uprising in Iran, and this sense that it may finally have the clerical regime there in Tehran on the ropes. So we're talking today about, is the Iranian regime finally falling? And to help us sort this out, we have our friend Ramin Parsa. He's an Iranian-born pastor. He was a Shiite Muslim, but converted to Christianity when he found Jesus, became a pastor. Actually, Ramin, we've had you on the show recently to talk about how you pastored a church in America after you fled to Turkey, then America, but married an Israeli Jewish believer and live in Jerusalem now. That in itself was a fascinating testimony. Good to see you again.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Yeah. We know it is under very trying circumstances because just to let everyone know that Ramin still has family in Iran and has been in contact with them recently, but he's lost contact with his brother Paiman. Tell us what happened, what is the latest on your family, what are you hearing from him, and what's the latest about the situation there in Iran?
So last time I was in contact with my family was about a week ago, my other brother and my mother. So my brother was shot a few days prior to that and arrested. So he contacted my sister and told my sister that he has been shot with this, you know, with the shotgun. They shoot people and all these small pieces. So he was hitting.
He would say a lot of injuries to eyes.
Yeah, in face,
getting
in eye.
BB.
Yes, that's right.
Shotgun BBs.
Yes. So this, he was shot in the head and the legs. So he contacted my sister. He said that he's been shot and he's hiding with some other protesters in a garage. Mm. And the forces, the regime's forces were surrounding them. So until 3 p.m. local time, he was in contact with my sister. Then he was not answering his phone. And then his phone was completely shut. So we didn't hear anything from him until I talked to my family again, and they haven't found him yet. And then he lost all contact with them because the regime shut down all the internet, even landlines. So even inside Iran, people cannot call each other.
The physical telephone lines in and out of the country have been cut.
Completely. Internet, landlines.
That's drastic. They're afraid for their lives.
Very much. The regime is very, very panicking. They know it's the end, and they're trying to do everything to stay in power.
Yeah. So we've had about 2.5 weeks now of these protests. And, tell us a little more of what's going on the streets. Is it just in Tehran? Is it all over the country? How many are showing up to protest?
Oh, millions, and in every city. So cities that I had never heard about. I mean, there are so many cities in Iran, like 222 cities that they had protests. So some of these cities, I never even heard the names because there's different parts, remote areas, villages, people rising up in villages. There was a city with about 55,000 people, 45,000 came on the streets. So that tells you that this is a spontaneous uprising of people who are sick and tired of a regime, sick and tired of Islam, because both economically, socially, politically, internationally, the Iranian people have been oppressed. And this is why they have nothing else to lose. So everybody has been affected. You know, I put it this way, just economic side. If you go to Iran right now and buy 1 pound of beans, with that money in 1978, you could buy 27 cars. So just imagine, with the money you could buy 27 cars, today you can only buy 1 pound of beans. So just economically, imagine, people lost all their livelihood.
Yeah, young people, desperation.
Yes, people can't get married. They cannot buy a house. They cannot buy a car. They can't even afford food. They can't afford food, daily food. So that's why it was like a combination of social pressure, economics that caused people to just rise up against the regime. And about 30 years ago, I remember when I was a kid, there were some protests against, you know, university students. They want some more freedom of speech, and there were more, you know, pro-reformists, the reformist party in Iran. And reformists and the fundamentalists are the same, basically. Mm-hmm. They're the same, two-headed, same snake. So they wanted some more, but then it became more, then economic was more pressuring. And then it became more, okay, the whole regime is a problem. And then they say, no, the whole Islam is a problem now. Mm-hmm. So it was a progress, like an evolution of people growing into this point that they say, you know what, we have been invaded by some outside forces. These are not even Iranians. Mm-hmm. You know, Khamenei, the Ayatollah, the terrorist Khamenei, he has never been into Persepolis or the tomb of Cyrus. Hmm. But every day, every year, he sends people to Iraq, to Karbala. It's where the tomb of the Imams, and to Mecca in Saudi Arabia, encouraging people to go there and even subsidizing their travel.
So he doesn't even know the history of the nation of Iran.
Exactly. They don't want to, because the history of Persia, it's contrary to the narrative. You know, Cyrus the Great, he was one of the first Zionist Gentile. Mm. He was the one who helped the Jewish people be free from Babylon, sent them to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple.
Gave money himself.
Exactly. Gave money. And also Artaxerxes, he sent Nehemiah to rebuild the walls. He sent Ezra to teach the law of the Lord to the Jews who came back from captivity. Darius, you know, he fasted for Daniel. Mm. And he proclaimed that the God of Daniel is the only true God. So imagine if we knew all of this, then it's contrary to all this anti-Semitism and hatred toward the Jews and Israel that the regime was pushing. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, today the Iranian people, most of Iranian people, everybody, those who are protesting, they know that it's not just incompetence. The regime is doing all these things on purpose. Basically, on purpose, they're oppressing people. They want people to be poor. Mm-hmm. They want people to be destitute and, you know, in need. And because they know Iranian people are not on board with their agenda, with their goal, with their jihadist mindset. Mm-hmm. And they want to be free. Basically, Iran is occupied. Mm-hmm. It's occupied Iran by some Islamic forces that came from outside and took over Iran.
Came from down under, the underworld, exactly. Shall we say. I think one report I saw said that in terms of the economic crisis in Iran, that when the Ayatollahs came into power, $1 was worth 70 rial, the Iranian currency, but now it's 1.14 million rials to
That's
the
right.
dollar.
That's
it's
right.
about 1,000% collapse.
That's
even
right.
you know, if everything doubles in price, we all feel it, but 1,000 times, this is free fall.
Absolutely. I remember, you know, my father, he bought a house during the Shah for 40,000 tuman. So 40,000 tuman is like 400,000 riyal. And he bought the house for 40,000 tuman. Today, a dozen of egg is like 500,000 tuman.
It costs a dozen eggs cost more than your house back then.
A few times more. Like, you know? So imagine the people. I saw a video. My heart just broke. This older lady. She had saved a lot of money in her wall. You know, in her safe, cash money. And then when she brought it out, she couldn't buy anything with it because it was so worthless.
Yeah.
And it's her livelihood.
That's a lesson for all of us.
Yes. And it's like, you know, sweat and blood. They work, they save money for their children, for their, and now it's worth nothing. And their son was saying, "Mom, you cannot buy anything with this money today." Mm-hmm. And they were so it's affecting everybody. It's not just one group of people. We want to have this, more of these people put up with them. With, okay, woman had to wear hijab, Islamic. Okay, they did it. People, they couldn't say what they want. Okay, they put up with that. Okay, and then it came to a place where it's affecting their table, the food. Their refrigerator is open. And then on top of that, no electricity. In the summertime, there was no electricity. There was like blackouts 4 hours a day or more. And the water shortage. They were telling people not to take shower or not to, you know, that water will be rationed and so forth. So people, and then air. I mean, air, the air, which is the freest thing we have. People don't have air because the regime is burning a fuel called mazot. And mazot is a very unhealthy fuel, so they use that to run the factories or to run the where they produce electricity.
So, yeah, pollution.
pollution. The air is yellow, mm-hmm. and people cannot see from, 50 meters from distance. Mm-hmm. And that's why people say you took everything from us. You killed the water, you killed the rivers, you killed the whales, mm-hmm. you killed the economy, you killed all of our livelihood. Mm-hmm. And then they banned all the social medias. But people have to use VPN to use, and they do. Yeah. And satellite dishes is illegal. People use satellite. And then the people of Iran, they look at people in Israel. They see people in America, in Europe. They're in most of the part of the world. They're dancing and they're singing. And, they're having a good life. And they have. And people are saying, comparing themselves, look at us. And Iran is a rich country. Iran has wealth and money, oil, gas. But people are destitute for the daily bread. Mm-hmm. And that's why people just exploded. And on top of that, they were beating the woman for not having hijab, not having hijab, for not having enough hijab.
Yeah, there were protests, two or three years ago.
Yeah, they killed Mahsa Amini. Yes. And this is just one instance. They harassed women. They had the Sharia law police, morality mm-hmm. police. They would throw people, grab women, dignified women who were, respected people. They would drag him on the streets, throw him into a van. Not because they were like, didn't have clothes, just because a little bit of hair was out. Mm-hmm. Or, a little bit of their garment was, a bit short, and they have pants on. Mm-hmm. But still, they began to harass people. Mm-hmm. So on top of all of the economics, and the whole world thinks Iranians are terrorists. Even myself, when I was out, all people are afraid. Are you okay? Are you terrorists? And Iranian people are the people of music, art, literature, poetry.
Chess.
Mm-hmm. They make rugs, mathematics, Very smart people. And they have been taken hostage by a jihadist ideology. Mm-hmm. By the jihadist regime.
Which take back to the 7th century.
Exactly. And you see the Ayatollah, how he dresses. He not only dresses like 7th century, he thinks like that way. Mm-hmm. So people are sick and tired. And they say, we're done. And they're so sorry what they did to the Shah, their parents, their grandparents. They're actually cursing their grandparents. Say, what did you do to us? Mm-hmm. You left us with this mess. And now they're giving with their blood.
You don't do that in your culture.
Exactly, yeah.
But this is how desperate.
They're desperate. Gone. They say, you ruined our livelihood. Mm-hmm. You brought this regime upon us. You kicked the Shah. Because, I was in Korea in 2015. I was speaking there at a few churches. And one Korean older brother, he told me, he was a truck driver in Iran in in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So imagine the Koreans would come to Iran to work as truck drivers. Mm-hmm. Iranians would take vacations in France, in Italy. Mm-hmm. And look at them now. They cannot mm-hmm. buy food. So imagine Korea is now exporting cell phones and TVs and cars. And look at Iran. Mm-hmm. So people, they just see themselves that you have gone taken backwards.
Yeah. You lose your dignity as a
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the lady who was beaten up and killed for immodesty by the modesty police, and it sparked protests. There have been protests before when Obama was president and a million people in the big square in Tehran, and he didn't do anything to help him. We've seen these before, but it never really toppled the regime. Why is this different? And let's talk a little about what really triggered it.
Well, one of the reasons is this time is different is because it's much, much bigger. And also because of President Trump. President Trump, he has supported
what happened
people.
In Venezuela exactly. gives them hope.
Exactly.
Maybe that triggered it.
It does.
Was the timing about the same?
Yes, the timing was the same. And then because the dollar, what happened, Venezuela was laundering money for the regime in Iran. So mm-hmm. Venezuela was sending a lot of gold to Iran. Mm-hmm. And the regime in Iran was sending a lot of drones, defense mm-hmm. system to Venezuela. And because of that, when Venezuela fell, dollar suddenly just went up like 50% more. Mm-hmm. And the market began to shake and all the market began to close. Oh, so it began in the marketplace. And then it spread to everybody. Then all the people, they began to be affected by this. For example, in Iran, the stores, the grocery stores, they would not put a price on the items. Because every second, price will change. And there were people from the bazaar, they said...
You got to shop fast.
Yes. And people in the bazaar, they said, the merchandise. He said, I sell something right now for this amount. I go to buy to replace it, and I have to pay double. Mm-hmm. So even the people who had shops, they're losing money. Mm-hmm. And then the people who are buying, they are losing money. Mm-hmm. So people are just, it just exploded.
It's just funny thinking of the Israeli shook, the Machane Yehudir.
Yeah, exactly.
The same guys been saying Arba four shekels for a pound of tomatoes for years, you know.
But and now someone says, I know, 100.
Arba, Hamesh, Shesh, Sheva, oh, hurry, come get them.
Yeah, like, you know, you're in a, what do you call it, when they have something for sale, they say, okay, five, and they say.
Barkers, yeah.
So the Iranian people have suffered. But the only good thing about this regime, came to power, they showed us the true face of Islam.
Yes.
Iranian people, I mean, we used to go to mosque for Persian New Year. We used to go on the streets with tens of thousands of young people, older people, women, beating ourselves, crying for Hussein. Hussein was Muhammad's grandson. Mm-hmm. Crying three nights, we'd beat ourselves and cry for Ali. He was Muhammad's son-in-law. We thought they were angels. They were the victims of oppression, and they were like, you know, social justice warriors.
The Sunni Muslims.
Exactly. But now we found out that all of them were terrorists. Muhammad was a terrorist.
Yeah.
Ali was a terrorist. He butchered 700 Jews in one day. Mm. So we found out that, wow. So this regime really helped us to see what Islam is. Mm. In my own personal case.
The regime looks back at the 7th century as a golden age of Islam, when it was conquering the world and actually had a lot of knowledge and development. But it was a ruthless time.
Absolutely.
It started by a militia leader, I'd say.
And it ruined the Middle East because they destroyed all the works of the apostles.
Yeah.
All the churches, they killed the Jews, Christians, and they took over all. They went all the way to Europe. They almost took over Europe.
Yes.
And it was, you know, Charles Martel who he got up and he fought against
Battle of Tours or whatever.
Exactly, he fought against them and pushed them back.
When they came otherwise, to the Pyrenees,
Europe will be Muslim now. There will be no America now.
Yeah. That's part of the nostalgia. If we please Allah, He's going to allow us to finally conquer the world like we almost did back then.
Yeah, and that's their whole agenda.
Yeah.
And
let Iran burn, Ayatollah Khomeini
said, just
give me Islam.
And he said that the blood of the martyrs is watering the tree of the revolution.
Yeah.
So he said more blood is shed, this tree gets stronger. That's exactly what Khomeini said. And you know, the Persians and Jews have many things in common, but this very important thing. The Jews and the Persians are the only people who came back and taken their lands back from the Muslims. Mm-hmm. So imagine the Jews came back, they took Israel back from Islam. And then the Persians are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So these two nations are, you know, they have this destiny, they have this the thing in common that unites them against Islamic terrorism. And you know, this is a battle between Michael, the archangel, and the prince of Persia.
Mm.
Remember in the book of Daniel?
Yes. It's a spiritual battle.
Absolutely.
We need to be praying.
Absolutely. Praying, and we have a three-day fast, Esther fast. If people can join, just pray, intercede, because these are the decisive moments that would decide the fate of this region. And even, it's the most pro-Israel thing to do right now, to pray for Iran to be free.
Yes.
Because if Iran is free, all the proxies go away.
Yeah.
This terrorism, the nuclear thing, is the missiles, and the regime is working on chemical bombs.
Yeah.
So they must go.
Something like Erdogan in Turkey will be a new threat to Israel, but this Iranian regime and all the mischief and the death and destruction it's caused, hopefully there's a different future ahead. I know the 12-day war between Israel and Iran back in June, six, 7 months ago, it also has played a big factor in this, in that Israel humiliated the regime.
Yes.
The Ayatollahs have always said, you know, people complain, you're taking all this money and giving it to Hezbollah and Hamas. They said, well, we're doing that to create a ring of protection around us.
Yeah.
So that we never have to worry about fighting and let them fight there. And here Israel took control of their skies
and
destroyed all the nuclear scientists and all sorts of leaders.
Yes, that's right.
So it showed the regime was weak.
Absolutely. And I was telling the Israelis before that, I said, listen, taking over Iran is easier than Gaza. And people would laugh at me. Say, oh, no, you. I said, listen, the regime has no support from people. And we saw that there was no defense. There was no. And toward the end of the 12-day war, they were sending like 2-3 missiles a day. So they were almost dying off. And because Israel destroyed their defense, the launchers. Mm-hmm. And so the Iranian people were. It definitely played a big factor in the uprising because it weakened the regime.
Well, this is a good question, because some are saying, you know, let's see if this will be a revolution where the regime gets scared and some of the top leaders flee, rather than military intervention by the U.S. or Israel, because once that happens, you could have the people sort of feeling patriotic and uniting against a foreign enemy. And that's the risk you take. But are you saying there's so much opposition and hatred of this regime?
Absolutely.
That people would rise up with you if you came and intervened?
Absolutely. People are begging. I said, please, Israel, Trump, America, do something. Come to help us. So Iranians, it's not that,
Trump,
you know,
says, hang on, help is on the way.
Yes, help us on the way. And the people of Iran are begging. The last time I talked to my brother, I said, please tell them to help us. Send us weapons. Do something to help us so we can defend ourselves. So Iranian people, they realize that they already have been occupied by a foreign force. Mm. And that foreign force is not America, is not Israel, it's the regime in Iran. Mm. They look at the regime in Iran as a foreign entity that has occupied their country. Mm. And seeing America and Israel hitting the regime, they see it as a favor, not as an aggression. So that's why they want the regime in Iran to be destroyed, even by the help of the foreign country, because this regime would kill even if it takes millions of people
so
to stay calm.
You can't hope for a what you would call a velvet revolution where the people rise up, the regime gets scared and flees.
This regime is
not much bloodshed.
This regime is such a jihadist regime. You know, in Syria,
they're true believers,
yes,
in Allah.
Absolutely.
And
they want to,
vision.
They think they will, you know, if they get killed, they go to paradise. But this regime is such a jihadist and they love power so much, mm-hmm, that they are willing to kill so many people in order to stay in power. I know one more thing that's very important I wanted to mention. I have seen hundreds of videos from Afghans, Turks, that they are inspired by the Iranian people. And they already are saying, we want to be like them. And I saw Afghans telling to the other Afghans, look, they closed the schools in Afghanistan for women. Women cannot go to school. They are oppressing us. They're beating our women. And we don't do anything. And look at Iranians. So what's happening in Iran is already inspiring even the surrounding countries. And I believe when this regime falls and the people prevail, it would inspire other people under Islamic oppression to also do the likewise. Mm-hmm. Because in 1979, when revolution happened and Khomeini came to power, they took over a huge, rich, big country. So other countries, Muslims, were inspired to do the same. Mm-hmm. Now, when the regime falls and people are free, it would inspire other people in a good way.
Hopefully towards a democratic revolution. But there's also the possibility you could wind up with something worse.
No, in Iran, because people don't want them. See,
yeah.
The people, for example, in Gaza, why do they say Gaza is harder than Iran to take over? Because mm-hmm, most of the people in Gaza still hate Israel. Mm-hmm. They still are pro-Hamas. They still hate the Jews. In Iran, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
The Iranian people, if you notice, they, the protesters outside Iran, Iranians, mm-hmm, if there's a pro rally, you know, pro people of Iran, defending people of Iran, they have Israeli flag in the one hand, mm-hmm, Persian flag in one hand. After October 7, everywhere there was a pro-Israel rally, Iranians were there with the Israeli flag defending Israel. Mm-hmm. So Iran is a different people. Persians, we're not Arabs. We don't have Islamic. We hate the Islamic identity. Mm-hmm. And we are going back to our national identity.
You said they're burning synagogue. I mean,
mosques.
Burning mosques.
Yes, 35 mosques have been burned. Because the mosques is where this besiege, where these terrorists are produced.
Yeah, yeah.
They go there, the imam tells them, you know, if you become a jihadist, you kill the infidels.
See, private militia that
exactly
enforces the regime.
Yes, and they brainwash these young people. They tell them to say death to America. So Iranian people see mosques as the entity where the terrorism is produced, yeah, the root of the problem, yeah, Islam.
Now, we talked a little bit about it, that Iran, it's only about half Persian ethnically. There's some Arab community, there's Turkmen, there's Balukis, there's Azeris, Kurds.
Lors, yeah.
Different, there's a small, very small, 8,000, 9,000 Jews and yeah, different communities and a very diverse population. Half of the population made up of these small, small minorities. And I think one of the problems that a revolution hasn't happened or succeeded yet, an uprising, is because there's no unifying figure. But we just met in Washington. We have some photos we can show the people where Dr. Jürgen Buhr, our president, and I met with Reza Pahlavi, yes. the crown prince, the yes. son of the Shah, who gave a wonderful speech, his plan. This was before this all started happening, but things seemed to be ripening of how he would lead a revolution there as a transition figure. He wouldn't be there to reestablish some, you know, monarchy and dictatorship, but he would say, I would move on and plant democracy in Iran and then move on and let the people elect whoever. And is he a unifying figure? Is there someone else?
Absolutely. He is a very unifying figure. Iranian people are rallying around him.
They didn't before. In these other revolutions, they didn't.
Yeah. But because what happened, the previous revolution, 79, it was a mistake. So people are rectifying this mistake. They're saying, you know what? We, our parents, our grandparents made a mistake. Because now, you know, my mother was telling me how I was under the Shah. My father was telling me how I was under the Shah. I was born after the revolution. But then we see videos nowadays. We see, you know, films, footages that Iranians, wow, look at, you know, they're ski watering and they're so having fun and so forth. And people, Iran was rich and free. Women could dress the way they want. So after people saw those things, they're so sorry what they did to Iran, to the Shah.
Young people see the time of the Shah yes. as the golden age
exactly.
of Iran.
Exactly.
And
his grandfather.
Lived through the oppression, the abuses, but it couldn't have been worse than this, where the reservoirs that give water to Tehran, the big city, the capital, have gone dry. And
absolutely.
And the government can't even provide water to its people.
Absolutely.
So this is total incompetence, total
you know,
weakness.
The regime in Iran took away dignity from the people of Iran.
Yes.
So, for example, the Iranians before the revolution, they could travel anywhere with Iranian passport.
Mm.
They could travel to all different countries.
Now you're outcast.
Respected, you know, Persians, they were respected people. But now, even myself, you know, I've been here, I'm married to an Israeli. Mm. I have an Israeli son, Jewish. Mm. My wife is Jewish. I've been here for 3 years. Now I'm going to court for my residence here. Why? Only because I was born in Iran. So even I've been away 20 years.
You become
years.
A pariah state
exactly.
and it's affected you even though you love
yeah.
Israel.
Even I'm away
preach for,
19 years.
For, to support Israel.
That's right. Wow. Even in 19 years I've been away, it's still affect. It's like following us, this curse. And that's why the Iranian people, they want this to be broken. They want to be free from this once forever. And they regret what they did to the Shah. And they want his son back. And his grandfather, Reza Pahlavi, Prince Reza Pahlavi, his grandfather was very good because when he took Iran from the Qajar dynasty, mm-hmm. it was like Afghanistan. I mean, women had the veils.
Yeah.
It was no student, no school,
it
no roads, no roads, no railroads, no army, nothing. And this guy, Reza Shah, he was an army general. Mm-hmm. He took over. And he really modernized. He took the hijab off of his own mom and sister
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, told the other woman, be free from this. You can choose, but be free. And then Iran began to blossom.
Mm-hmm.
Every country that distances itself from Islam, from Sharia law, it grows.
Mm-hmm.
Any country that gets closer to Sharia law, it gets worse and worse. Like Turkey. Look at the economy in Turkey is going down. The lira used to be, you know, two lira was $1. And now it's like 35, 50, just in a couple of years. So any country trying to be jihad, they're cursing Israel. We literally experienced the curse that God told Abraham, if you curse Israel, you'll be cursed. The same curse came upon Iran. No water, no electricity, no food. And everything got dry, everything got gray. And the people parted their ways from the regime. That's the most beautiful thing, that Iranian people separated their ways from the regime. And they're blessing Israel. And I believe that's why God is bringing freedom to Iran, because the Iranian people, they parted ways from the regime. They want to be free. They're blessing Israel. They want to be friend with Israel. And, you know, strategically, I tell you how important this is for the regime to fall, for Israel, for America, for the world. So imagine Iran has oil and gas. Israel has water technology, AI, you know, many other technologies that can defense, can help Iran. So these two countries can become allies against Islamic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Cyrus Accord, you know, these two countries can become allies against Islamic
the
terrorism.
Abraham Accords with the Arabs, Cyrus
yes.
Accord with
it's
Iran.
More important than Arab. This is the Persian, the Cyrus Accord. And on top of that, strategically for America, Because right now, the regime in Iran is an ally of Russia, China, North Korea.
It'll help break up BRICS.
Exactly, exactly. And then it becomes more pro-America. The Middle East becomes more pro-America. Mm-hmm. So strategically, and then, you know, affecting the whole region in a good way. So this is so important. And that is why the devil is trying so hard to keep that regime in power. Mm-hmm. And our prayers are very important these days. That's why it's a decisive moment. Mm-hmm. Our prayers can really make a big difference to topple this regime. And it would be good for Israel, for America, for all the free world.
And I think what Israel did really helped trigger this with Trump's help.
Yes.
And that Trump, in many, many countries, developing countries around the world, he is a figure of peace and and prosperity and freedom for a lot of people. I know in the West, he's still a lot of detractors, shall we say, people with Trump derangement syndrome, but for the Iranian people, he's a figure of hope.
He has done
for
so many
future.
Good things. He brought peace through strength.
Yeah,
he really, because that's what language, the Muslim world, that's the language you understand.
You gotta have strength.
Absolutely. If you don't have a strength, during Obama, ISIS came to power. You see, during the Biden, the whole mess. So Trump has is the one who actually is bringing peace and prosperity, not only to America but to other countries.
Okay. We need to be praying for Ramin's family, especially his brother, Pejman. Pejman Parsa, and I think the Jewish and Christian communities in Iran. Be praying for them, because we want his brother to show up safe somewhere. But they could also become really victims of the brutal regime there. Please be praying for him. Anything to say about the Jewish community or the growth of
the Jews
Christian
are under
community?
Very much scrutiny right now. They're being watched, and the regime has the Jewish community. I heard that the rabbi in Iran told all the Jews not to go out, because if they arrest one of them, then that's it. They accuse them of working for Mossad, and so that's why. So pray for protection for people from the regime, from the bullets. Pray for courage and boldness and continuous boldness to go to the people, get to the streets and topple the regime. Yeah. Pray for confusion for the regime, that their weapons would not work against people, their plots will fail. Mm-hmm. So pray that this regime would be toppled, and then we can go to Iran with Bibles and preach. Yeah. And Iranian people, millions of them, have become believers already, and all the believers outside Iran will go to Iran. So there will be a wave of revival. Underground church will come out. So it will be, and then it will be a blessing to Israel. Mm-hmm. A free Iran will be the most pro-Israel thing we can do right now.
Yeah, we pray for that. Western leaders in the U.S., Israel, and Europe especially would have wisdom for the right measure of intervention.
Absolutely.
To try and help this revolution along, that it doesn't turn into some long, protracted civil war. My goodness, Syria fell in 12 days. And let's pray the Lord will topple this regime on the day of his choosing and by his means.
Amen.
In the name of Jesus.
Amen.
And we love you, Ramin.
Thank you
very praying for you and your family there.
Appreciate it.
All the best.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
Yes.
Thank you.
And that's our time for today here on the ICJ Weekly Webinar. Hope you've learned a lot. Please be praying for the people of Iran, especially the Christian and Jewish communities there, and for this regime to go. As Ramin said, it's one of the best things that can you can pray for Israel is pray for the chasing of those evil ayatollahs in Iran. Hallelujah. We'll be back next week here at the same time, Thursday, 3 p.m. in the afternoon, Israel time, with another ICEJ webinar. God bless you from Jerusalem.